Welcome to episode 22 of Owl and Foul's Norwich City Football Club We Meet Again series. This is the podcast where we look back at the history between Norwich City and our next opponents. We look at all the big games, historic matches, significant moments and player connections. This is the penultimate episode now, Foul. How are you feeling?
You know what? I've really enjoyed doing it. I'm a little bit sad to see the end of it. Even over Zoom, it's good fun, isn't it? Obviously, in real man-to-man, face-to-face is better, but even over Zoom, yeah, it's good fun talking about all the games. And it's going well. Not quite as well as Norwich are doing, flying high at the top of the league, but, you know, we're doing all right. I'm enjoying it.
I think that helps, actually. I was thinking, it's funny how your team's performing at the time kind of impacts stuff like this. So I imagine, it, say if we were bottom and really struggling and there was a toxic atmosphere at the club, do you think that would make this a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, I guess so. I think, and so, like, if Norwich aren't doing very well, I tend to shut myself away from it a little bit. Not that I still watch the games and everything, but I tend to sort of, like, stay off, like, the social media and that side of it. So, yeah, I think the fact that we're doing well and everyone's sort of really chirpy about it all and everyone's on social media and generally the atmosphere is pretty good from what you can tell, yeah, I think it helps. It's going well, isn't it?
Definitely a feel-good factor, isn't it?
100%. Flying high at the top of the league. Emi Buendia leading the way once again. Yep. We all know what Buendia can do. The little wizards.
Yeah, but it's the dreaded transfer window, isn't it, Phil, coming up rapidly.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, the thing is, if you're at the top of the league in a championship, you're doing something right. And if you're doing something right, then there's always going to be interest. I mean, of course there's going to be interest in Buendia. I can't believe he's still here, to be fair. And Aaron's. I can't believe either of those two are still here. But they are. So fantastic. And I don't want to tempt fate here. I'm touching wood vigorously, right? No pun intended. But I think that we'll keep them. As we're at the top of the league, I think we'll keep them. At the end of the season, I've got a feeling we may lose Buendia, especially, and Aaron's, even if we go up. That's my prediction.
And I think it makes a difference because it's January in that there's going to be a certain number of clubs in the Premier League that are potentially struggling. I don't know whether they're going to be quite as an attractive proposition for these players to move to as they would have been in August before the season started. The example I heard was Cantwell going to Fulham in August. You could see that being a very attractive move.
Yeah.
Now, with the way things are going for both clubs, is that really going to be a wise move?
I 100% agree with you again. And also, it's like, they're talking about Buendia to Arsenal. And don't get me wrong, I am not for a single millisecond trying to claim that we can compete with Arsenal on a level playing field. At the same time, when they're 15th, 16th in the league, and playing dreadfully, and if at the beginning of the season, you said that, you know, Buendia off to Arsenal, you'd say, fair enough then, wouldn't you? But you look at them now thinking, just probably right at the season, wouldn't you? See where they are at the end of the year. I always felt like Pritchard going to Huddersfield. I know Huddersfield did stay up that season and we obviously finished mid-table, but I honestly felt that Pritchard could have waited to the end of the season and gone on to bigger things than Huddersfield. And as a result, his career's kind of petered out. You know, Huddersfield went down. He's had injury problems. Wasn't necessarily the best move for him, was it, in the end?
What's it going to say, Phil? You got any ideas for Christmas specials for us now that series is coming to an end with the league programme?
Obviously, there's the FA Cup coming up. We've got that. You know, I think if we could do something there. I mean, I'm not sure. COVID special, some sort of lockdown special. Have you got a special idea?
I haven't, no. I'm 100% focused on the league programme. How's the Owl and Foul Christmas merchandise going? Have you got any shipments in?
I'm going to be honest with you, I've been a little bit slack on the merchandising ideas. We could bring out our own gin line. I'm into gin at the moment. How about Owl & Foul's special promotion gin? And a club brought out Fark gin, didn't they, for the last promotion?
Excellent. Okay, so you could go down the alcohol route for the merchandise. And we could get our own labelled pint glasses as well, couldn't we?
Oh, there we go, sorted.
An Owl & Foul tankard. Excellent. On that note, let's move on to episode 22. You know who it is, don't you, Phil?
I mean, we're running out of choices now. There's only Barnsley and QPR left, and I know it's not Barnsley, so it must be QPR.
It is QPR. Or is their full name? So we were talking before this. It's Queen's Park Rangers.
Queen's Park Rangers, indeed, yeah. Inexplicably always shortened to QPR. The only acronym in British football, surely.
And we were saying, what would Norwich be, weren't we?
I suppose we do shorten it. We shorten it to City, don't we? Or Nodge, if we're from Norfolk, as we all are.
It's a great name, though, isn't it? A little bit different, isn't it?
I presume you know why it's called Queen's Park Rangers.
I don't. No, have you put me on the spot there?
No, I have. I thought you'd know that. I don't know either. Oh, well.
You thought I was leading up to a an interesting fact.
Is it where the Queen scored her first hat-trick? Is that the ground she's played once in? I don't know.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Definitely. So they play at Loftus Road. You've talked about your very special football stadium criteria boxes that need to be ticked.
Yeah.
And I imagine Loftus Road ticks quite a few of those, doesn't it? Have you been there?
I've actually not been there, but from what I've seen of it, absolutely ticks all of them. Right in the middle of, you know, residential, city area, walk to it, pubs around it, ticks everything.
Tight stands.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yeah, I saw a 2-2 draw. This was back in the days of the Brian Hamilton
era. Brian. Yeah, remember him well.
Not great times.
No, not terribly either compared to what we did have afterwards.
Exactly. I think it was two mid-table sides playing out a typical 2-2 draw. I think we had a lot of loanees come in around about that point.
Yeah.
And that was that. But yeah, fantastic day out. It's more the day out than the game, actually. Brilliant ground. They got one of those classic away ends where they dedicate one of the stands behind the goal to the away team. I quite like that structure. Do you like those grounds where the away end is behind the goal?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's one of those things which hasn't really bothered me before, but it's certainly one thing that away fans pick up about Norwich, isn't it? The fact that we don't. We seem to get criticised for quite a bit on social media that the away fans should be behind the goal, which obviously is nonsense. Teams put away fans where they want, but that is clearly something which people like. I actually sit behind the goal, don't I, in the Upper Barkley?
Yeah.
So, which I quite like, I must admit. Quite a few of the grounds I've sat in, actually, I haven't sat behind the goal. I've sat on corners and things like that, Old Trafford, White Hart Lane, those sort of places.
Yeah.
Or the new White Hart Lane, I was behind the goal when I saw them in the FA Cup this year.
Boom.
Slipped that one in.
I always think it's a bit of a strange thing for a club to do, to dedicate an away end behind a goal, because it almost gives the away team an advantage, doesn't it?
I think that's probably true, actually. I think that's a fair point. And I think that's probably why away fans get wound up that we don't do it. I suppose from the club's point of view, it depends which part of the ground has the best facilities for segregating fans.
Did you know that once we did experiment with away fans behind the goal at Carrow Road?
I seem to remember that, but it was probably a little bit before my time, I should imagine.
Would have been around about the early 90s when the Barkley end was first seated.
Oh, right, okay.
The original plan was that, funny enough, where you sit, the Upper Barkley, was going to be the new away end.
I always think it's a risk putting different sets of fans in the same stand or different tiers. That's just asking for trouble, isn't it?
I think it did materialise in trouble. I think it only ever happened in one game, and they binned the idea after that.
Yeah.
So I think for one game only, the Upper Barkley was the away end at Carrow Road. Have you ever been tempted for experimental purposes only to watch a game at Carrow Road in the away end? As I have. I don't know why, it just out of interest more than anything.
Not really. The only time
you haven't thought about it, have you?
It has happened, hasn't it? Because there's always that thing where, like, end of season games when Norwich won something, which obviously has been the case over the last 10 years. Obviously, the home stand sells out first of all. I remember actually it's Coventry, funny enough, as one of them. I know we talked about Coventry a few weeks ago. But when we won the league, didn't win the league, we finished second, didn't we, with Paul Lambert. And Coventry were the last team at Carrow Road for the season. And it was party, promotion, parade day, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there were a few Norwich fans infiltrated the away end. The only tickets they can get, the home sold out. At the end of the game, as like the Coventry fans were starting to shuffle out and the ones that didn't want to watch us, all of a sudden shirts started coming off. I had Norwich shirts underneath. There's a few doing it from that point of view. I have done it the other way around, which I have mentioned. I have sat in the home stand to watch Norwich playing away at Ipswich, actually, funny enough. So
yeah, we're not going to be seeing you in the away end at Carrow Road anytime soon.
I mean, it would seem strange. What would happen if it happens? I've had to have given up my season ticket and then bought a ticket
to
the away end. Yeah. And maybe that's it.
That's how it works.
What team is it? Who are we playing against? Is it Millwall or Leeds? Am I getting properly thrown to the Lions?
That's good talk. PPR, well known with Les Ferdinand.
Yeah, fantastic player.
I mean, he was one of their stars. And they were London's top club briefly in the 1990s.
Yeah.
They had a really strong side back then, certainly in the early days of the Premier League. And then it all went wrong, didn't it? How many times have we seen this with clubs throughout English football? So
yes,
they just overspent, desperate signings, crazy wages, just throwing money desperately trying to stay in the Premier League.
Yep.
And of course, when that relegation happens, the club's sort of tinkering on the brink then, isn't it? At one point, they were under threats of point deduction, weren't they, I think?
could well have been. I know there was a very strange time when they were taken over by Tony Fernandez, was it?
I think he was linked to Norwich.
He was also linked to Norwich at the same time. And also, didn't they get involved with Thingy from F1 as well? I can't think of his name now.
Oh, Bernie.
Was it Bernie Ecclestone?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So I remember we lost to them at home once, 1-0. I think it was under Roda. And they had 10 men, I think. And they scored from a free kick, which we kind of charged down once. And it was about 5 yards when the ball was kicked. And then it happened again. And the free kick kept getting moved forward to the infringement. And I think on the second or third time, they just kicked the ball under the wall and it went in. And we lost 1-0. Yeah. And I'm sure it was about that time they were involved with Eccleston. They were down to 10 men, and they were singing, "We've only got 10 men, we've only got 10 men." And we were singing, "We've only got £10, we've only got £10," because they were, like, on paper, the richest club in the country, something stupid like that, with the ownership they had. But it never came through, did it? It never. They had a brief trip into the Premier League with us, didn't they, under Colin?
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. I think they stayed up that first season, though. But
yeah,
I think they threw more money at it. And you get in this bit of a vicious circle, don't you? We see it at clubs. Just they made some really funny signings as well, didn't they? Big, big wages on players that probably had their better days elsewhere. A real vicious circle. And I think they ended up dropping into League One, didn't they? And,
right.
and then obviously came back into the Championship.
Yeah.
And they've been in a Championship club for a few years without ever really seriously contesting the playoff spots.
Nope.
Classic mid-table Championship club, would you say?
Our old hunting grounds, wasn't it, for many years? Yeah, that mid-table obscurity. And I actually really talked about the Brian Hamilton days earlier and about playing QPR in those mid-table kind of like fairly uneventful. Yeah. Because this is it. I think sometimes we need to appreciate it. Even the seasons as of recent times who have gone down, how lucky we've been for the club always to be interesting, because me and you can certainly remember plenty of times where we're just watching games thinking, what the hell are we watching?
Once. Just going for the motions
and
a lot of times, some games.
And a lot of it is just like just total lack of quality. I remember like playing hard, we lost 1-0 under Roda. He'd just not long taken over. We were doing fine. Just nothing. We were going nowhere. I think Hull made the playoffs that year, maybe. They had JJ Okocha playing for them. But like just looking around the team thinking, this is nothing's happened. We've not had a shot on goal.
Yeah.
We've not looked threatening. It's just total lack of quality and interest.
It's a period where we just about had enough to stay up each season.
Yeah.
I think a few years we took it a bit close, but enough for us to win enough home games to pick up points to be that lower mid-table.
Yeah.
And then it's just repeat, isn't it?
And
next season.
You've got to say it's where QPR now, isn't it? That's just sums QPR up, doesn't it?
Now, last meetings fell. And for me, and we were both at this one, and I thought that was one of the best first halves I'd ever witnessed live from an Norwich team. I think we were 4-0 up at half time. This was the last game of that long winning run.
Yeah.
Getting towards the end of the Championship winning season.
Yes.
And I will caveat that with the fact that QPR were one of the worst sides I'd ever seen at Carrow Road.
Yes.
live that day. So, you know, it's really a swings and roundabouts. But obviously that was the game where Emmy picked up his red card.
Yeah.
And we then went on to draw the next four games. So as I say, that was the last of the... I've got it down here, the eighth consecutive win that was.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So you remember the game?
Yeah.
Well, did you similar thoughts?
QPR were in a pretty terrible pink kit, weren't they? Steepman scored fairly early doors, didn't he, I think?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It's
Pookie got a couple, I think.
I think it was 3-0 at half-time, wasn't it? And we went and scored another one.
You're right, actually. The fourth came after Emmy's red card.
That's right.
So I remember, even though they were awful, I remember still being slightly concerned when Emmy went off at 3.
Yeah.
And then I think Pookie scored the fourth to... you know, really calm everything down.
Yeah, you're right in all you say, really. I thought we were all over them. I thought we were by far the better team. I didn't think they looked up to much.
And Emmy's red was a strange one in that I think it probably was a red just about, but he'd taken a few tackles before that, and it was a classic case of frustration, wasn't it?
Yeah, again, you're 100% right. And this, for me, was the problem with refereeing in football. More than, and it's something which VAR won't sort out. And I remember talking about it at the time. It's obviously, as VAR was coming out, wasn't it? Towards the end of that season, yeah. We're going to new season. The Emi Buendia red card was a red card. It was that simple. It was a bad tackle. But it was born out of frustration. And the point is that he had had so many niggly fouls in him running up to that. He'd had 3 or 4 fouls in him, which were given as fouls, but they should have been yellow cards. But weren't yeah. yellow cards. Emi does one, and the letter of the law was applied very accurately, shall we say, to Emi. Correctly, it was a red card. I'm not complaining about the yeah. card itself. But there's like 3 or 4, and including in the moment he got a red card, there's a challenge just before that. I can't remember if it was on him or Pookie, but well, that should have been stopped then, you know. And then it goes yeah. on. It's just that sort of refereeing inconsistencies. I think that's what's more frustrating.
The only way you could solve that is to have the whole game run on far. Isn't it?
I honestly don't think it's a VAR issue. I don't think it's a case that we should review them and retrospectively book him. I just think the referee just allowed QPR to get away with so much. You could see what was happening. It wasn't a case of like Buendia should be protected because he's a delicate player, but it was a case that he was being. You could see what QPR are trying to do. They were just trying to kick him, weren't they?
I think, like a lot of clubs, they know that he's got a short temper, don't they? And they.
Yeah.
Use that to their advantage, don't they? You often see this happen in the game, don't you?
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest tricks in the book, isn't it? You know, wind up the person with the shortest fuse.
That's exactly what Burnley did, wasn't it? Towards the tail end of last season. Wound them up, got them sent off in the first 40 minutes, and that's Norwich beaten, isn't it? Obviously, from QPR's point of view, it's about 70 minutes too late.
We're talking of VAR. We're doing these podcasts on VAR, aren't we, in a way? It's all video
yeah, it is,
technology,
yeah.
isn't it?
And we go back and edit the rubbish bits, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. In the good old days, podcasts would have been based on human error.
It would have been. Every podcast would be an hour and 45 minutes of us talking rubbish.
So, the away game that season, do you remember it? I think you got it confused with the Blackburn one, didn't you?
No, I got it confused with the Reading one. The QPR game, we won 1-0. I can't think it was a manager, though, then. Was it McLaren?
It was, yeah.
Because Pookie put it in with his chest, didn't he?
Yeah, McLaren didn't like it, did he?
No, he didn't.
Claimed it's a fluke.
A lot of people claimed it's a fluke. I thought it was a very clever finish myself. I don't know what you thought
yeah.
of it.
Likewise, yeah. I thought it was, you know, he improvised, didn't he?
What I like about Pookie is that he's very deliberate about everything and very clever. And doesn't generally try and smash the cover of the ball, does he? It's just quite, sorry, cricket in term there. Doesn't try and sort of smash the ball to pieces. But he's very clever, I think, and very delicate and very accurate. And I think that was just another example of his cleverness. The ball was in a position where he probably couldn't quite head it. He wasn't going to get a foot on it. So he just improvised, and I thought it was very clever. Fair play to him.
Yeah, I don't quite know where McLaren was coming from, really, because even if it was a fluke, it's still a goal. He almost said it wasn't a proper goal, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I just
I think that was the words.
Yeah, he still says it's a goal. Do you know what I mean? It's always sort of thinking, well, that shouldn't count. Well, it does count, so unlucky.
Maybe he was buying into your policy. You remember where you were going to start awarding points
that's
policy
it.
Of goals?
But I think he's sour grapes in that one. It wasn't a bad goal, was it? It wasn't.
I think he was under pressure at QPR at the time, wasn't he?
I've got a feeling the home game against us was the new manager's first game. I think he'd just been sacked not long before that, hadn't he?
Yeah, McLaren wasn't in charge at the Carrow Road game.
That's it.
I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. I think it was one of their ex-players.
But yeah, I think it's a manager under pressure, isn't it? They say these things.
Yeah.
I was watching Match of the Day 2 and Dean Smith was on there talking about the West Brom game. And he had a decision which he thought should have been reviewed and gone the other way. But like it was which is fine, but he was quite jolly and happy about it because they'd won quite comfortably.
And I guess we could swing that back to Emi's red cards. So saying the highly unlikely scenario that QPR got back into that game and we ended up drawing it.
Yeah.
Or even losing it. Does the opinion on that red suddenly become a lot more focused?
Yeah. Oh, of course it does. So
I was going to say almost it was, we won 4-0. Okay, we're going to miss Emi for a few games, but we're in such a strong position.
Yeah.
That we could easily sort of move on from that.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. It does change it. And that's true because these moments are game-changing moments potentially.
So, Phil, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Which club have we played competitively more than any other?
As is a QPR podcast, I'm going to say Barnsley.
Oh, Phil, you're close, but you're incorrect.
Yeah.
It's QPR.
Oh, is it? Okay. There's a shot. Right, there we go.
A brave attempt.
Yeah.
So we played them over 125 games, stretching back to the Southern League days.
Wow.
It's largely been honours even. We've won 49 to their 41. And it got me thinking, really, is there any clubs that you feel like you've seen more than any others? Is there a club that you seem to think, oh, I see these lot every season? QPR might be one of them, mightn't they?
Well, you thought so, but not really. I'm trying to think. Southampton always seems to come up a lot for me. Don't know why.
I think with Southampton, we had that pint in League One with them, didn't we?
Yeah.
And also we had a few seasons in the Premier League with them, and then the Championship as well.
I think sort of like teams like Wolves and Newcastle as well seem to come up a bit. But on the other hand, the problem is it's always easy to confuse frequency with memorable games, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, QPR, we seem to have played them quite a bit in recent years, definitely.
It's one of those clubs because they went up with us, didn't they, as we talked about under Lambert.
Yeah.
So we obviously met them then in the Premier League for a couple of seasons. And then they went down and then we went down the next season. So we've almost followed their pathway.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, we didn't play them last season. Hopefully, we won't be playing them next season. But that's another thing.
Yeah, and if they come up with us, that's fine.
Yeah, I'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
But can't quite see it. Although they've got one of your favourite managers, haven't they? Mark Warburton.
I mean, I say favourite managers. I was quite a fan of him when he was at Brentford, but he's not really kicked on since then, has he?
Didn't he go to Rangers?
Yeah, he did have a spell out there, yeah.
And Forest as well, didn't he?
And Forest. But Forest, another team like Watford, they seem to go through managers at a rate of knots, don't they?
Yeah.
With less success than Watford seem to.
Watford and Forest are a couple of teams that we always seem to play as well.
Yeah, those two sort of teams always seem to appear quite regularly.
But no one more than QPR, Phil.
They're number one.
There you go.
Our BFFs.
They're number one. Now, I was going to bring you back to the 1975-76 season. This was a day that a dream died at Carrow Road, and it was QPR's dream, Phil.
Okay.
I imagine you don't know anything about the QPR side around that time.
No, I don't.
No.
No.
Wouldn't expect you to, Phil, but they were a very flamboyant side. One of England's top sides, actually. They'd built a really good side based around flair. And that season, so 75-76, they were in the fight for the title,
okay.
So the Division One title that year. They'd never won it before.
Yeah.
It was a bit like their 1975-76 was kind of like our 1992-93 season. So it was their one real show at the championship.
Yeah.
They came to Carrow Road on the 17th of April, 1976.
Yeah.
I think they won a run of 12 games, of which 11 were wins.
Yeah.
So they were really entering that final stage of the season on top, top form. And they had a surprise defeat at Carrow Road. We beat them 3-2. I think we were just a mid-table side, and we've talked about this dozens of times, haven't we, how pressure can affect teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, we beat them 3-2. That defeat, like I say, was their first defeat in 12.
Mm-hmm.
And it was critical. Liverpool won the title by a single point that season. They've never come close to winning it since, so that was almost like their one shot. We messed it up for them, Phil.
We sunk them.
We did, yeah. A bit of a shame, really. It'd be nice. It's always nice to have a different side win the title, isn't it? I think that's what was so good about Leicester winning it. So, yeah, I think we've gone down in QPR history. That game has been a real defining game for them because I think if they'd won that, that would have taken them over the line.
Yeah.
Norwich away sort of fills your average QPR fan with dread because it brings back thoughts of that particular day in that season. So QPR, we talked about Loftus Road. That was famous for the plastic pitch. And we talked about this in the Luton episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
How we're not big fans of the old synthetic plastic turf, are we?
Nope.
And again, it definitely gave QPR an unfair advantage. Just during that time on the plastic pitch, they had some very high finishes in Division One, and we never won on the artificial surface.
Oh, really?
So we lost our first game 2-0 on it in October 81. Played another six games on it without a win. There's got to be something in it, hasn't there? Player connections. So I'm going to talk about a couple of Hall of Famers
okay.
and an expensive flop.
Okay.
Do you like a flop?
Absolutely. Well, love it. Well, that's actually, that's a new idea for our podcast, isn't it? Getting flops on and just telling about rubbish.
Yeah, it was, every podcast seems to focus on the legends and the heroes, doesn't it? And getting them on and talking about what a great career they had.
Yeah.
We were thinking of, and there's quite a lot to choose from, isn't there?
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone's got Anton Sibierski's agent's number, tell them to get in touch with us.
I don't quite see the attraction from their side of coming onto a podcast.
Maybe get their, you know, get Jason Jarrett to get his point of view across.
There's certainly more flops than legends, isn't there? We've got an endless supply of them. I just don't know why they would decide that this was an appealing or an attractive proposition for them to do.
It's the money. We have to turn the money hose on, aren't we? That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we're broke though, Phil.
Yeah, so there's a number of flaws in this idea, but, you know, see what happens. Yeah. Watch his face.
But I like it. Creativity.
Yeah.
It's good. I'd probably rather, and Libby's mentioned this, actually, that because I wrote my book about the Norwich City Hall of Fame, she was saying you should do a podcast where you do an episode on each of the Hall of Famers.
Okay.
So you either interview the Hall of Famer, or for the ones that are no longer with us, you talk to one of their relatives. On paper, sounds a fantastic idea. I'd love to do that. I'm sure you'd be up for that, wouldn't you,
Phil? Definitely.
But it's very hard to pin these people down and get them committed to doing interviews. So,
I mean, there's...
Maybe this is a call for help.
This is it.
If there's any Hall of Famers listening. So back to our Hall of Famers and our flop, Phil. So the good stuff first, the Hall of Famers. So Percy Fargo, have you heard of him?
No.
No, I didn't expect you to. Well, he was the first proper Norwich City goal machine, so our first striker that consistently hit a lot of goals. I think this was back in the 1920s. Check this out for a record. He scored 47 in 60 appearances.
That's not bad. Got to give him that one.
It's good, isn't it? It's an all-time record.
Yeah, not surprised.
As a ratio.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be pretty high up.
And we're not going to, you know, do him a disservice by saying, oh, it's easier in those days, because I think that's lazy journalism, isn't it?
Still top of the tree, isn't he? Still the only one to have done it.
Yeah. With that ratio, hasn't been beaten. Obviously, we talked about Pookies.
Yeah.
Pookies is, what, 1 and 2, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's ahead of that. And then the other one, the opposite end of the pitch, and a name you will be familiar with, goalkeeper Chris Woods.
Yes, Chris Woods. Oh, I did not know he was involved with QPR, though.
He was. He was certainly at Nottingham Forest, and I'm not sure if he went from Forest to QPR, and then we signed him from QPR.
Okay, yeah.
Or whether he started out at QPR and then went to Forest and then us. But he had a QPR link, as did Percy Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris Woods, he missed only 5 games between 1981 and 86.
Yeah.
And in his last season, he kept 17 clean sheets. He also won an England cap.
Yeah.
Or maybe caps whilst at Norwich. He then went to Rangers in a big money move, and he's in the Rangers Hall of Fame as well. And the final stat is he set a British record for minutes without conceding a goal. I'm not sure how many they were. And again, let's not do him a disservice by saying, well, that's easy in Scotland.
Well, also, that wasn't true back then, was it? I mean, it's not. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy in Scotland now, but the Scottish and English leagues were much closer to each other, weren't they?
And the national sides as well.
Yeah.
I think it's reflected in that. The Scottish national side was almost at the same level as the England side back then.
Yeah, exactly. So that is quite impressive.
But, you know, I think Rangers, when he joined, they were... It was before the money had flowed into the English game, and obviously Rangers, as a club, were as big as anything in England. Both Chris Woods and Percy Fargo... I think they both started out at QPR and went on to achieve, as those statistics back up, went on to achieve great things with Norwich and beyond.
Yeah.
Now, on to the not quite so successful signing of Dean Coney.
Dean Coney, okay. I do remember Dean Coney, yeah.
March 1989.
Yeah.
So that was the year that under Dave Stringer, it was our best season in the club's history to date. So that was the year we talked about where we got to the semi-finals of the FA Cup. We ended up finishing fourth that season.
Yeah.
I think in March we were still in with a shout for the title.
Yeah.
350,000, which...
Good money back then.
What could you get for that now?
Exactly. Yeah, not a lot.
Probably You, just about?
I'd sign for 300.
He'd got a good record at QPR, obviously, you know, to be fair to him. You know, that's why we spent that much money and why we targeted him as being the man that could, you know, be that final push for glory.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that same old story, isn't it? I think he had an injury.
Yeah.
There was a lack of goals, became a bit of a scapegoat by the fans.
Yep.
And when you got those three things into the mix,
yeah,
it never works out, does it?
No, exactly.
He got just the one goal in 17, so he wasn't the answer. He wasn't the man that took us over the line, won us that first ever top flight title. If it had happened, that would have been dominating these podcasts we're doing, wouldn't it?
It would have been. They'd have been the 1990s, whatever they were called back then.
Yeah.
So this is it. Again, it's a name I know, and it is a name.
Yeah.
It's like I was aware of Norwich back then, and I was a fan back then in a limited kind of way of my age, really. But it's a name which gets chucked around as a bit of a, you know, just not a success, really, wasn't he? He's unfortunately, like I say, on the flop side of the spectrum. So
yeah,
I look forward to our podcast.
Should we get him in?
Yeah, I was going to say, I look forward to the podcast with him.
First guest?
Yeah, exactly. You'll love it.
Maybe we should re-record these podcasts when you're in your 80s, Val.
Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll do that.
We'll do the We Meet Again series.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do the mathematics, 2060 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then when I say, Val, we're going to dig deep into history now.
Yeah.
Can you remember the 2020 campaign? You'll be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember Daniel Farker's team.
Daniel Farker, yeah.
That idea moves us on to final thoughts, Val. And yeah. I haven't really got any. I remember we had a crucial 3-0 home win against them, 26 April 2008, which secured our place in the Championship for another season. Obviously, we both got promoted in 2010-11.
Mm-hmm.
They went up as champions that season.
Yep.
But I think we beat them on New Year's Day. Russell Martin got the winner.
Yeah.
And then obviously we doubled them in the Premier League the following season.
Yeah.
And there was the Joey Barton red card.
Yeah. Which is quite hilarious. Bradley Johnson, wasn't it? So they went to the darts afterwards. And Bradley Johnson and Grant Holt had were on the camera, weren't they? With Barton, your breath stinks banner, wasn't it?
They were, yeah. That was in the days when you could celebrate a win, wasn't it?
It was, exactly, yeah. That's crucial, though. We beat home anyway that season, didn't we?
Yeah.
I do remember the home game as well in the previous season when we beat them in a championship in our promotion season, because I'm pretty sure that Grant Holt, I'm not going to say dive, but through his attacking nous, shall we say, got their centre-half sent off. And I remember Neil Warnock being none too impressed about it after the game, good old Colin.
Right.
It's also worth remembering that when we were 2-2 against Derby, deep into stoppage time, QPR thought they were promoted, and all the fans and everything had invaded the pitch, hadn't they? And everyone was going absolutely mad. And then we scored like the 97th winner, which meant all the fans were like, well, oh, we're not up yet then. I just have to go back in the sands, sit down now, won't I, or go home. So that was always good fun.
Brilliant. Any other QPR games spring to mind?
Not really. So, but I just think it's worthwhile mentioning it under that Paul Lambert when we beat them home and away, just how crucial that was, really. It's those sort of things we didn't do the last few times we're in the Premier League, is it? Beat those teams who are around you to be beaten.
Yeah.
Home and away.
Yeah, exactly.
And how important that was, you know.
So what are you going to go for, Fowl, on the scores?
I'm going on a theory here. If I just predict a win, at the moment, the chances are I'm going to be right more often than not. Okay, so
yeah,
I'm going for another win. I think we're going to do it, and I'm going to go 4-0.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a win. I've been very pessimistic. Redden and Cardiff, Blackburn, and we've always got over the line. And yeah, I need to start backing them because I'm not scoring any points in our predictions at the moment. It could be a big one as well, couldn't it? I'm going to go 3-0.
Excellent. Good call.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Fowl. So that's the penultimate episode wrapped up.
Getting teary.
Just one more to do.
Yeah, I know. You're starting to well up here, mate.
That's it. Yeah. Well, you wait until we do the final one.
It's going to be emotional.
Get the beers cracked.
Get the Prosecco out. We'll have a Christmas party for it. So I presume it'll be sometime around Christmas. Maybe not Christmas Day, although, let's face it, we've not got a lot else planned over Christmas now, have we?
Yeah, I was going to say, normally we wouldn't get away with doing a record on Christmas Day, but I think this year might be the exception.
It might well be, mightn't it? Yeah.
We could do it after the Queen's speech, can we?
Oh, that's going to be great fun, isn't it? What's she going to say this year? Well, just...
I don't think she got the energy to say anything, really.
No. Charlie.
After this year. We'll get a date in the diary for the big finale. And yes, thank you very much, Phil. And I'll catch you soon.
Thank you so much.
See you, mate. Bye-bye.